Hey, and thanks for listening. This is Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Let's get started. Today with me, I have a gentleman, a very handsome gentleman, nearly as handsome as myself. His name is Ben Ladani. And Ben, why don't you tell everybody listening a little bit about yourself?
So my name is Ben Ladani, as Jeff has said. I run the agency Creative MMS out of Bucks County, Pennsylvania, and we focus on bringing ideas into focus. We are dedicated to bringing ideas into focus by using all sorts of open source technologies and keeping things cost effective for our clients while applying some really cool design and some cutting edge front end work to some really cool back ends, open source stuff like WordPress and Drupal and some custom stuff that we've written. So we like to say that we leverage the best of technology to bring a lot of return on investment to our customers.
I thank you for that. And now that everybody knows who you are, I want to ask you some questions about some stuff that I am really actually very curious your perspective on. So I'm going to start with some soft stuff, and then I'm going to, as we get into it, I'm going to dig a little bit deeper and ask you some things that might be a little stickier.
Oh man, I know it's coming.
Yep. Okay, but before we get into all of that, here's the real question. If you could be any superhero, what superhero would you be?
That's a tough one. And I think I've answered that once for you before, and I don't remember what I said. So now I'm just going to say how I'm feeling today. I'm going to go with He-Man. Today, I feel like He-Man.
He-Man. Holy yes. God, that is a unique answer.
Because
you know, I'm not going to get that answer for the next, like, 13 episodes,
no,
maybe
no.
50. I may not even ever get that answer again.
And that's what I was hoping. I would go with something unique. But here's the reason why, is because when you're a kid, you want to be that superhero when you grow up. And I'd like to believe that I've become the superhero that I wanted to be when I grew up, which was He-Man. So
fascinating. You know what? It's funny. I think I should preface for everybody that's out there listening that I'm 33. Ben, you are?
Same.
So, we are the same age. I totally grew up with He-Man. He-Man was my jam. And as a kid, I would agree, I was totally a He-Man fan. And then somewhere along the way, as many people know, I am huge into Spider-Man. So my answer would clearly be Spider-Man. But that He-Man is a great answer. So what is it about that? Because I have a theory that you can tell a lot about people by the superhero or villain that they would choose to be if given the opportunity. So why He-Man?
Well, He-Man stands for like the greater good, right? And he's this like beefy muscle man, kind of has to defeat the same enemy and hold down his fort constantly. He's somebody that everybody always looks up to and tries to do right. So it's just kind of like what I'd strive to be, you know? And I wish I could remember half the episodes that I watched when I was a kid, even though it was probably the same thing over and over and over again. But, you know, it was always like you're rooting for him and I want people to feel the same way. So that's kind of what it is. I mean, I think if He-Man were some degree of a digital Don Draper, I might like lend myself to believe that's a little bit more what I should be like.
He-Man Draper,
man. That'd be cool.
Excellent. It's so funny. You listened to the last episode with Lynette Young. Did you hear me coin the term moving target market?
Yeah, I totally did. And I was going to check for the domain real quick. But
she did it during
already.
The episode, she said. But I think it's what's funny is that in this one we've coined the idea of a He-Man Draper.
Yeah, He-Don. It's the He-Don.
Yeah. So this podcast is clearly just a birthplace for incredible ideas that, you know. So, okay, so let's shift gears and let's get into some realness. The first thing I would want to know is, you know, you're a big fan of open source technologies. And as I'm well aware, you're a very big fan of WordPress. And I have my own theories on why that's a good thing. But I'm curious why you chose to build your entire agency around an open technology when in many ways, using an open technology makes it much easier for people to take the work that you've done and go to somebody else. So why did you choose to build your agency around open technologies?
Yeah, it's a great question, especially because a lot of clients will kind of hint at that but not directly ask it. And so I think it starts with a core religion that I had when I started the business, which was that I really wanted to focus on bringing my knowledge and expertise and ethics from the foundation of my, you know, studying at Villanova and Catholic upbringing and all the, you know, background into the technology world. And I took a course on the ethics of computing, which studied some really cool things about like how people knew about the fact that the Challenger should never have gone up with the O-rings in that temperature and so on. And it was kind of like eye-opening to see that, you know, when you, with great power comes great responsibility, to kind of throw that little hint at the superhero things. But
that just made me really happy.
But no, seriously, as technologists in an age where not everybody understands this, we have a lot of responsibility to make sure that we're educating people on the best that's out there and using things that they really should be using. And I cannot ethically stand behind selling somebody a, you know, a proprietary system that they should be using that limits them to the current development shop that develops it. So that formed the core basis of, well, and this was before WordPress, that we had these theories. Well, okay, well, we should be using Java and PHP as opposed to Microsoft. Microsoft in and of itself is cost prohibitive to startups, especially, you know, .NET and all the technologies and underpinnings of servers that the costs were to begin with. Well, then WordPress comes along and it's like, this is the best pairing of anything, because now not only is it open source, but it provides a lot of the usability things that people need to get a site off the ground. And I mean, of course, it started as a blogging platform. It wasn't really the best choice for a lot of clients starting out until it evolved into something where you can choose the homepage and you could choose some of the settings that were needed in order to make it a real website. So, you know, that being the case, my quote and claim to fame has been since then that you should always be able to take what we do and take it to anybody else to support it. And the thing that differentiates us should be our customer service, and that you shouldn't want to leave us because we're that good and we provide that great customer service and quality.
That's so what's up, it's man. That's, it's a good theory to stand behind. Like, you know what, we're going to give you something that you clearly could take elsewhere. We're going to do such a good job that you probably won't. I mean, it's kind of ballsy. I mean, sometimes it's you know, it's I will say to clients, like, we're the best at what we do, and if you don't want to work with us, that's fine. So it's kind of that same sort of like putting it out there. Like, I'll give a list of my competitors. I'll say, here, go check them out. Enjoy yourself.
Well, have you ever taken over a client for somebody else?
Yes.
Like from somebody else?
It's typically awful.
Yeah. So that experience is something that clients should never have to go through, right? It's kind of like it's you know, in many ways, it's almost like the divorce of a marriage, right? Where, you know, one person may not really want it to happen. The other person may want it to happen. And in the end, there's resentment. There's all of these kind of like pent up angers and things like that. And it shows in the client transition. Mm-hmm. So it's not really fair to do that to people, I don't think. And with open source technologies and access information becomes the only thing that people really need. And so we'll say right at the outset, here's all your access information, store it, you know, take care of it. And at the end of the day, you want somebody else to quote the workout, go for it. We're also, and you know, it's challenging too, because we're also not the cheapest shop in town. We're cheaper than most agencies because we're virtual mostly and have a team that's spread across the, you know, Northeast Coast, not even the full East Coast. But that being said, we also do really good work, and we try and focus on making sure that clients are really happy with what we're providing for the cost that they're paying. So I just think that experience in terms of taking on somebody else is indicative of the way that you would not want to treat your clients. Your clients are like your family. You know, that we partner with every one of them. We really feel a strong connection with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this, though, because I feel like I've seen this movie before, to be honest. You know, when I remember when there was this big buzz around Linux and how Linux was just going to, like, dominate Microsoft, and like Windows had seen its end, and here we are years and years later, and iterations of Microsoft Windows that have succeeded and failed, and here we are, and we're still in a Windows-dominated environment. And granted, that position of dominance is slipping a bit, but I feel like the proprietary versus open battle has happened before. And maybe the outcome will be different this time around, but what's to say that offering this sort of open solution and allowing people to take it, why is this time different around than somebody that's just a company that's just going to go from one proprietary solution to another, to another, to another, and just kind of keep hopping from lily pad to lily pad rather than having sort of a stable ship through the storm?
It will never end. I mean, you're in a vicious cycle that will forever continue, and that's the hope. There's core belief. It's just like a religious belief, you know? There's core belief in keeping things open, and there's core belief in the fact that things should be paid and that software is not free. That being said, I'm not advocating open source for everything. I think there's a certain place for paid license tools, and I think that the majority of the service that I'm providing is to smaller businesses that are benefiting a lot from the return on investment of open source technology. That's not to say that somebody that really needs a very good system management tool shouldn't be, or let's say product management tool shouldn't be using something like a Pinnacle Card or some kind of cart system that's out there that is a little bit more robust. The other thing is open source is a starting ground. It's not to say that it's not paid, right? There are certain paid things that are built on open source technologies, like a lot of the plugins that you might buy, Akismet, for example, for WordPress, right? You're going to pay for a license for that. Would you consider that open source or is that paid? Is it licensed? What's the model behind it? So at the end of the day, I mean, the licensing structures that Microsoft establishes and so on, there's a really blurry line as far as if you're just going to say, oh, is it open source or if it's not?
Mm-hmm. You know, what's funny is that both you and I are Apple guys, and we're also both, Google guys in many senses. But it's funny because we both toe that line where we really appreciate openness and choice and interoperability and all of that stuff. But at the same time, we're like, you'll pry my iPhone from my cold, dead hand.
Right.
It's just funny. Like we're like, we hate control. Control's bad. Except for my Apple environment, because that's,
but you okay jailbroke yours, right?
I did. Well, so I originally had jailbroken it, and then I got iOS 7 developer copy. So now I'm running iOS 7.
Yeah, of course. So all you're doing is you're tinkering with the new technology that's out. You've put yourself in a box so that you can play in the future space. And once that future space becomes the normal space, because you're an early adopter, you're going to switch gears and you're going to break it again.
Yeah.
One really smart developer I worked with in the past said something really that stuck with me. He said, what's funny in technology is we spread everything out. We take everything and we break it apart. And then once we have it all broken apart, we realize it's all better together. It's like the client server architecture and the Linux-based stuff that you're talking about. We had these devices, these Solaris devices, when we were at Villanova in school, that literally they were such thin client devices. You'd put your Villanova Wildcat card in there and be able to connect to do anything that you want to, check email and everything through these thin clients. And that was like the future back then. It was like, oh, this is the way it's going to be, where there's no really processing power on this. It's just a screen that hooks into the internet. And then eventually everybody's like, no, that's not going to work. There's not enough processing power. We can't get enough done. And so they say, okay, well, we need really big, beefy machines, and you're going to get some really cool, heavy technology with, dual core, this and that and that. And now where are we again? We've broken it apart completely, and we're like, iPad devices, really fast processing speed. Don't need to store all that much, but at the end of the day, you can get what you need to on the internet.
It's funny. I talk about this concept a lot. And I call it the law of everything, which is the law of expansion and contraction. And you see it everywhere. You see it in what's happening in food. You see it in what's happening with our technology. And it's this idea where essentially everything becomes spread out and individualized and personalized and everything. And then we seek to try and create order from that. So we begin to create categories and we begin to bundle things. And then eventually everything becomes homogenized and boring. And then we seek to break it apart again. And it's this expansion and contraction in all things. You look at beer. Beer for a while was like there were hundreds upon thousands of different brewers. And then it all was just Bud and Coors and Miller Lite. And there was no differentiation between beers. It was all just homogenized crap. So people began to get tired of that. And then there were craft beers again. And craft beers began to make sense again. And then probably what will happen is the big, breweries will probably buy those littler ones and absorb them, and it'll become homogenized again. And it's the same thing with everything. It's expansion and contraction. I just see it everywhere. And to your point, it's technology too. We have too many different things. It's too fragmented. People need simplicity and order. So we reduce to the smaller parts, and then there's not enough choice. So other people come in, and then it expands and contraction.
It's true. I mean, you see it in banks, right? Same thing happened where all those mergers of banks. You see it in diets where it's like the Atkins diet is a thing. And then all of a sudden everybody's like, that is the stupidest thing you would ever do. Why would you do that to yourself? And so
Bacon.
It's like, oh, the gluten-free craze and all the different things that are out there. At the end of the day, it's like it has a life of its own and it's breathing. I mean, in a sense, it's like a metaphor for breath.
It really
right?
is.
Your lungs expand and then they contract, you know? And so the problem is once it stops, it's dying. So if something's not breathing like that anymore, it's going away. So, you know, I'm trying to think of an example where that might be the case.
Well, let's make it real. I mean, because this actually is like a perfect segue into the next thing I wanted to talk to you about, which is, you know, what are you scared of when you look out at what's happening on the web? I mean, here's one thing that I see. What WordPress has done for the web is that it has made things stupid easy. All right, and now you got things like 1&1, you've got Wix, and you've got all these other sites that are trying to make building a website stupid easy. At what point have we, I guess, contracted or expanded? I don't know which phase this would be of web development and web design where it becomes so easy where it's pushed you out of the game. Do you think that's something that could happen? Is there anything else that you're scared of as somebody doing what you do where you see a trend that's evolving that gives you cause for concern?
So there have been times when that was the case. I mean, as a matter of fact, I woke up after like the beginning of January, and I said, literally, I remember the morning, I turned to my wife and I'm like, there's going to be an end to this soon. And she's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, well, how long will web development really need to exist and web design really need to exist? And she's like, well, there'll always be a need. And I said, no, it's morphing and changing and it's innovate or die. If we don't morph and change, we're going to die with it. So it was a really interesting revelation to me because I felt like it wasn't that it's dying. It's not that the web is dying, because to me, the web is becoming the foundation for where everything else lives and breathes.
Everything.
Right?
It's the layer on top of our world.
Right. So you take the fact that you know, mobile devices and apps and everything, it's all client-server architecture, which is the foundation for the web. So that stuff is not going away. The cloud, where things live in the cloud is it's not going away. Everybody's now becoming dependent on their Dropbox, on their Google Drive, and all these different things, right? Not going away. But what's changing is the way we access the information. What's changing is the way that we design the information. We're used to consuming it. And the expectations of the user experience is just getting so much better and bigger. So what I chose to do with the business, at least, is look at how freelancers and I used to be afraid of the kids. I used to say these 12-year-olds that are out there doing stuff, scary.
Yeah.
I mean, the girl that invents a flashlight when she holds it with her hand and it powers the flashlight, that stuff is crazy. But what's interesting is you, as a business that's already advanced past certain stages, you have the ability to adapt to that and see it if you can recognize it. So what we did is we took the concept of like, there are these freelancers that are out there taking theme website themes from like ThemeForest and other places and adapting them into WordPress sites and trying to charge businesses for them to adapt them. But they're really at the core, they're either designers or developers. They're not really marketers. They're not really agencies. They don't have all the expertise that's needed to do that. So what we said is, you know what, we're going to jump on that bandwagon. So right now we offer, and we've sold a lot of them, these $2,500 packages, $3,500 if it includes copy, where we literally will buy a theme, we'll tell the client we're buying a theme, and we will customize it to the liking of the company. But we're going to apply what we call our agency eye on it. We're going to do the search engine optimization it needs, get it ready for search engine marketing if we're gearing up for that, find stock photography that's needed or grab photography that's needed to put it in, and we're going to do the marketing taglines and the copy that it needs to be in there. Because at the end, all we're doing is what I've been doing for the past, which is leveraging tools that are already out there to help make help make it more cost advantageous for our customers.
Got it, man.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, I think it's innovate or die. I don't think it's like, oh my God, it's going to stop. But I think if you're not on the current edge of everything, it's literally like getting chased by, a falling avalanche, right? You have to ride it. You have to be ahead of it. You have to just follow it down. You can't just let it consume you.
So what are some of the other trends that you're seeing that, because you and I, you know, we meet and talk and kind of interact pretty regularly. And I remember one of the last times that we were discussing website trends and things, you know, we talked about how there was this trend for a while, and you still see it a lot, especially in a lot of those Theme Force themes and things, where there's that sort of like slider, you know, at the top. You got the big image, the kind of cover photo that goes between one to the next. It's usually between 3 and 5 images and has very low click-through rate. And then what we saw is that sort of storytelling one-page websites where the kind of the menu bar stays at the top and it just tells a story down the page. What are some of the things that you're seeing now that, you know, as somebody who studies the web, lives on the web, and is constantly looking for the next thing, what are you seeing out there that is kind of the next evolution? Where's the trend taking us in websites?
It's a great question. So there's two major components that come together to form what I believe is the current trends in design. And those are the technologies that are available to developers, so HTML5 and the JavaScript libraries that people are out there creating, and then the accessibility of the internet and the speed of the internet. So we couldn't do what we were doing now 5 years ago because HTML5 didn't exist, or, you know, those libraries weren't there for developers to do them. But we also couldn't do it because the speed of the internet was not as fast. So you couldn't have these huge sliders with images loading as fast in because people would be waiting too long for them to come in. So I think the convergence of those two things dictates the design elements. And then I think there's some really like innovative and smart people that can do cool things that push it. Right now, you're right. I mean, trend is in those full scrolling pages, in the sliders that are up at the top, in really nice typography and open space stuff, single calls to action or minimal calls to action where it's almost like a step process, two things. But I think the next step and the next evolution of that is the tracking and the marketing automation that you and I have talked about a couple times too.
Yep. Yep.
Where it's not just that, but it's how successful really is this? And it's, if you're not A/B testing this, if you're not making sure that this is really working, you're not doing anything. Because I can tell you as an agency, I mean, we can tell you what we think is the best option, and we're probably 85 to 90% right. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't push the limits to be 99% correct about what's right, you know? Mm-hmm. Especially when each of those percentage points indicates sales, and that's a, you know, the top of the funnel to the sales funnel type things. So I look at things like HubSpot, Marketo, and like, you know, Marketo marketing to your existing customers with really cool, you know, types of tracking and knowing where they're at, social stuff and whatever. And then the HubSpot stuff, which is really intriguing to me, which is that whole like top of the sales funnel stuff to say, you know, where have people been on my website? Let's profile or segment an audience and say where they, you know, this group of people have all visited the process page of my website. I'm going to talk to them a little bit about the next step of my process or other options that might exist for them. That's cool stuff.
Yeah, man. So let's talk about on the same subject, right? So we're talking about the evolution of websites. We're talking about marketing automation. We're talking about going that next step based on technology, and we're talking about, you know, what's available to us and all of that stuff. So here's the real big question, because there is a very deep divide, I think, in terms of the two perspectives on this very topic. Mobile. Let's talk mobile real quick, because we're looking at the what's been dubbed the post-PC era. People are claiming the death of desktops, that soon we're just going to see tablets and smartphones and this and that. And I personally think that's a load of crap, because I think that there's still a number of things that you cannot do on a tablet or a smartphone that you can do on a desktop. Because, I mean, you're running Photoshop, you just can't do it on a tablet the same way. That being said, you know, there is some validity and some interesting theories about the appification of the web. So the, you know, you look at a company like, I don't know, like Clorox, right? And I'm strictly right now directly ripping from the Jay Bayer utility playbook. And he talks a lot about the appification of the web. And you've got a company like Clorox. Now, you don't really need to know the organizational structure of Clorox, or, you know, how Clorox works, or Clorox's, you know, investor information. That stuff probably doesn't matter to you if you're coming to the web. What you care about is you want to know how can you use Clorox to get out X number, you know, this sort of a stain or that sort of a stain, or how can you use it on your tiles. So creating an app that answers very specific questions about your product or service seems to be one of the ways that companies can create utility and create something interesting out of their product or service. So as someone who develops websites for a living, do you see yourself needing to think more and more about how to take your clients away from a traditional sort of static website that provides information and maybe, you know, even frequently updating information, and move more into the space of how can we take your product and service and make it an app? And before you answer, I just want to give you sort of an example of something that I had thought of. So, you know, I have a social business agency, and I think to myself, yeah, I've got this website and it provides information about what we do, and it provides links to the blog and the podcast and all that stuff. But what's more helpful to someone? What really provides more utility to someone coming to my website? To have that information and our pricing and all that, or to provide them with an application that says, we're going to review your website for you, click here and put in your URL and we'll provide you with a score. Or put in 5 social media sites that you use and we'll give you an overall average of your ability to reach a customer and who they are and where they spend their time and what their average annual income is. So do you kind of get where I'm going with it?
I do. I totally do. And I think there's a couple components to it. One is, can that be the only thing that you offer, right? Or does that have to be some kind of, like with Clorox, it's easy for them to do that. They've already got the name. They've already got the brand. They've already got everything out there to do that. And they've got the budget to justify trying to make such a huge play in that space. So I think that that's something you can't just, you know, you as a business need to have the core basics of like a foundation behind when you're at a speaking engagement. So when somebody has seen you, that they can validate that that's really you when they see your website. You can't just go the whole other route of having an app that just does what, you know, you're trying to target to a given audience. Will it work? Yeah, but it won't be a social business agency that you really are. That's just for you in general.
Mm-hmm.
You touched on the mobile thing a little bit there too, which I don't want to just graze over a little bit, but there's the concept of any screen, right? Which is that it's just got to work on any screen. And if you take one of the things I was playing with as kind of like an innovative experiment here is the whole Google TV thing that came out and kind of just got pushed by the wayside. But imagine what Google TV or Apple TV, if people really used web browsers inside it, would do to the internet, to people's websites, if they had to load them on places like that. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you start to pair that up with second screen experiences where I'm watching Clorox on TV and an ad comes up and my iPad should automatically load to show the Clorox ad and maybe to bring me that to that app that does those things. So I think there's a pairing of that stuff that needs to happen. I think from a website standpoint, and I don't know if I'm really answering your question here, if we're just diving into some kind of like, you know,
well,
deeper.
It wasn't really like – I didn't do a very good job of asking you the direct question in sort of in your defense of the answer. But it's kind of a – you know, I'm curious your perspective, the tying together of the mobile, the applications, you as a web developer, multiple screens, kind of where is it going? How's this all going to shift? And do you believe the post-PC revolution? Like, do we need to sort of plan for a time where there is no desktop and no websites and everything is apps and smartphones?
No, not at all. I don't think so. I mean, I think in the end, I think everybody needs recognition online. I think it's almost the equivalent of you saying, well, can't I just have a Facebook page instead of an actual website?
Yeah.
You know, and you've had that conversation with me before a couple times, and we're starting to say, it's great, but that's only for one audience. And that's the other thing you have to really think about is what does my audience want?
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, for right now, I can tell you with certainty that won't possibly be able to exist because there's a huge set of people that haven't caught up to the future of the world and the internet, you know, and they're still expecting things the way that they kind of were. I mean, we talk about scrolling pages and the new current design trends as if you and I just kind of it's like, yeah, no doubt. But when I talk to 80% of the clients that come to us, they're asking me, hey, we've seen a couple of really cool scrolling designs. What are people using out there? You know, so they don't really know this stuff 100%, where you and I, because we live and breathe it every day, really think that everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to just make sure that audience that you're gearing towards. I mean, what if it's, for example, we're doing a site for a golf social network. And, you know, it's kind of a little bit tricky for us to just say, well, this is only going to be used by you know, primarily males in the given mindset of like a 35-year-old to a 55-year-old as a primary audience, because the 55 and above are not really going to use it. You know, they may come there, but they're not there yet. So you can have that application, but again, that's going to be targeting a very, very specific set of people.
Gotcha. What do you think about, What are your – so you play with – I'm like a fan of open technologies, and I know a little bit about sort of the promise of what HTML5 can bring, and now I've heard there's talk of HTML6. But this – what do you think about the idea of applications, mobile applications, either tablet or smartphone, moving away from downloadable apps and sort of the app store model to a web-based model through HTML5 apps? Do you think that that's something that we're going to start to see? And then if that is something that we're going to start to see, do you then see an opportunity for something that's sort of the next evolution of responsive design, whereby if you visit a website from your phone, it actually, instead of showing up as a mobile optimized version of the site, actually shows up as an application?
Yeah, I like that model. I mean, so you're getting into the responsive versus app argument. And in many ways, it you can't even really argue one way or another because there's different uses for each thing, right? Our methodology nowadays is that every website that's built should be responsive. There is no real reason for it not to be responsive if you're building a website anymore. Are there cases in which, you know, we're doing a very low budget project that can't afford to have it designed in that way, or they pick a theme that really doesn't support it? Yeah, that happens. But in the end, again, it's about the audience and the technology and the things that you're gearing for. One of the best examples would be like if you're developing a game. You're developing a game, let's say that it's, you know, the next Angry Birds or something. You can't do that as well responsively as you could native to a phone. Mm-hmm. So it's really about the goals and what's available. And remember what I said about the convergence of the internet and the availability plus the technology. The technology and the availability of the internet is going to dictate whether or not this is feasible in the future. Because if you can take, let's just say that HTML5 and the technologies get so great that they can leverage the processing power of a native device better than a native device app does now, it may happen that responsive design takes over, right? And that is the future of it, and there is no need for installed apps. But in the end, it goes back to that break it all apart, put it back together thing, right? I mean, right now we said, yeah, your smartphone is a lightweight device. BlackBerry, when it started, just got email. You know, very simple, connects to a couple browsers to get information real quickly. And then, you know what, we needed to be a little bit beefier. We needed to download apps and install them, you know, and that's kind of, we needed to store that information. We needed to have better processing power and better, you know, graphics and Retina display and so on. So it's a push and pull where it's going to, the technology and the internet access is going to dictate it. I mean, what did look at Google Glass as an example. I mean, what is that going to do? How is that going to change the future of everything? Do you expect that I'm going to be able to load a website on that?
Yeah, that's there. I don't even know what to say about Google Glass. That is the sort of thing, the wearable technology movement, and that being probably the most exciting of the augmented reality, which again, buzzword of the day. I think that's the most exciting thing I've seen in a really long time. I mean, since the iPhone dropped, I think that's the most exciting thing I've seen is this wearable technology move us one step closer to being cyborgs. I really think that's exciting. But how does it affect the web? I mean, it changes everything dramatically because it's contextual. It's about the experience you're having as you move around. You don't need a website. You just need the information you need.
Yeah, and when you start to think about it applied in different scenarios, because we're talking about it applied to marketing and small business and so on, but those same technologies, when they're applied to like a doctor doing surgery or something that can access all the information without having to, you know, reach into his pocket or ask anybody, I mean, now you're talking about real heavy technology that serves a purpose and really changes things. The best experience for me that, like, I was, because I heard Google Glass, I'm like, who's going to wear those things? Crazy, ridiculous. Till I went to Disney World. And I went to Disney World and I'm with the kids and I'm like pulling out my phone to take pictures constantly and I'm missing everything.
Yep.
And I'm just like, it would be so cool if I could watch this and just mental note everything.
Yep.
You know, my friends and I in college, we used to do this mental snapshot thing where it'd be like, click, I took a mental snapshot. I'm going to remember that.
And I'm pretty sure I know exactly what you were taking mental snapshots of.
Yes, of course.
Amazing. Amazing.
Yes.
All right, dude, I got one more question for you before I'm going to let you go, because I know that you got the kids and the wife and such, and you got to get back. And I'm sure we're going to do this again. But I do have one more question for you. It's a brief one. We can dig into it a little bit. But I'm going to say something, and I want you to give me the first thing that pops in your head. Try to be as brief as possible. Are you ready?
Go.
Custom CMS. What's your reaction, Sam?
You
what
want
are
me
your
to say the first word that comes to
what's
head?
What's the first thing that comes out of your head when I say custom CS?
So I'm not just lamp stack. That's the first thing.
Mayonnaise.
Right.
I love
turtles.
Okay, so you're an open source guy, you're an open technology guy, you're big in WordPress, you're big in Drupal. You've picked up on other clients their previous efforts, and you hear the words custom CMS. What is it? How does it make you feel? What is it?
Yeah, no, this is fine. So I didn't realize it was one of those things where like the teacher spouts out a word and you have to write a whole essay. That's fine.
It doesn't have to be a whole essay. I just, what are your thoughts? Give it to me.
How many paragraphs do I have to go? Okay. So,
are you going to write in cursive? In your blue book.
So what I really think is, goals. Seriously, this is what's coming to my custom CMS. What are the goals that this is trying to accomplish? There was once, we did a project for a client that we were working with an exterior design shop. Designs came across, and they did not choose a CMS for which they were designing it for. So they literally designed these, like the concept of these modules that could get used in different places throughout the site, reused and used over and over again. And Drupal has a portion of that, right, where there's like this modular components in the sidebar and you can dictate sidebars and where they are and so on. And WordPress has a portion of that, but it's definitely takes a little bit of tweaking to get multiple sidebars or custom code a little bit and so on. And this was just so uniquely custom that we really did have to build it custom. I mean, we built it on a foundation, which was their existing custom technology, believe it or not, which is called Springboard and a system that we support. But the reality was that it was such a unique requirement for them to be able to have modularized components that were responsive in nature, can appear on a sidebar or within a page and still look and function perfectly. And it was like, nope, no CMS that I know of can do that. Would take a ton of work to put it into to make WordPress or Drupal fit in that, round peg square box, whatever that expression is. And we just said, you know what, we're going to have to custom build this into modules that people can manage. And it turned out awesome because it worked exactly the way that they anticipated the design team wanted to work and the way the design team designed it with the customer in mind. So it's all about goals. There are other ones too. I mean, you could design a full. We have a custom CMS that's built for a technology chooser that allows people to choose. We built it for CRMs to start, where you can answer a set of questions. Once you answer those questions, it gives you the priority of CRMs that are the right fit for you. So Salesforce, so on. It all determined by the questions and the answers that you give to those questions. The CMS that we needed to build for that was way more algorithm driven. So mm-hmm. The goals were so unique that we couldn't just build that on WordPress or build that on something else. So I think there's a fit for it. I think budget has to dictate it. The goals have to dictate it. And the customer has to be aware that it's something that's going to need to be supported. But there's security concerns and all sorts of other things that need to come up around it.
Interesting. All right, cool. That's not what I was expecting from you. So that's actually a far more comprehensive and interesting answer than I anticipated. So right on, man. By the way, we're definitely
because the simple answer
that,
is
that chooser.
Well, the simple
software.
Answer is for an all.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say the simple answer for that is, well, for online marketing websites for a small business, the answer is WordPress, right? I mean, it's got all the SEO functionality that needs to be baked in there, which a lot of the other ones do too. But I mean, it's easy to manage. The support for it's unparalleled. If you need to hire somebody to support it, they're all there. But you can't just discount the fact that a custom CMS might be the best thing. Now, if you're choosing an agency and the agency is pushing you towards their CMS because it's better than the rest, I would veer away from that.
Gotcha. Right on. All right, man. So we've just hit the 43-minute mark, and I want to be sensitive to our time and everybody listening, and we're definitely going to have you back for more episodes. So in the meantime, Ben, why don't you do us all a favor and tell everybody that's listening where they can go to connect with you online, where they can find out more information about your company, about you, where they can see pictures of your kids, whatever you want to tell them about.
Sure. Awesome. So you can find the business website's creativemms.com. Creative, M as in Mary, M as in Mary, S as in Sam.com. You can find us on Twitter, which we're not extremely active at, Creative MMS, but me personally, Wiseman Say is my Twitter handle. I'm on Facebook. Feel free to friend me. I'm way more active on that than most networks. I'm probably more active than I should be. And, you know, of course, by email, you can email us at hello@creativemms.com.
Perfect. Well, Ben, I hope you'll accept my invitation to come back another time, and I'm sure we will see each other in the very near future. I appreciate that you came on and provided some of your insight about all that's going on in the world of the web. I learned a few things, as I always do when you and I get together, and it helps me when I talk to my clients and such, so I thank you for that.
No problem, man. And if you see Skeletor, tell him I'm looking for him.
I will. Spidey will tell him. So for all of you out there listening, this has been Conversations, the True Voice Media Podcast. Take care.